Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Droppens den regn off my kopp. Hink via däckar måste si klein för den topp. Geht mir kein Sach mit. Die Droppens.
Welcome to Kill Me Now. I'm your beautiful host, Judy Gold. And this week we have Matt Bronger, who is a very, very funny comedian who is from Portland, Oregon, where my friend Dan is from. And we talked about that. Yeah, it was so fun talking to him. So I'm sure you'll enjoy part one of my conversation with him. Also, happy Halloween! It's Halloween! I hated Halloween growing up. I mean, I didn't hate it, but I would get such... Did you go trick-or-treating, Elisa? Elisa's here for the opening. Everyone. So I would go trick-or-treating, and I would then bring all this candy home, and then my mother would tell me what I could and couldn't eat, and then I would get a huge sugar rush and collapse. And, you know, I don't think kids can go trick-or-treating like that anymore. Do you? You used to ride your bike around the neighborhood. And that your mother used to say to you, come home before dinner or be home for dinner. And you would leave and they had no fucking idea where you were for the afternoon. And then you came home and that was it. And you had your own life. But not anymore. Now we can stare at our phones and our computers and play games. Oh, yeah. So listen, everyone who is a regular listener, I want you to know, you know, on my closing of the show, I always talk and talk and talk. And then I have this thing about whoever's listening to the end and people write to me. And I've decided to do most of my talking at the beginning now, but I'm going to still have a closing to see who listens at the end. So I want you to know that this Saturday, I will be in East Greenwich, Connecticut. I mean, oh, I'm sorry, East Greenwich, Rhode Island, because, you know, Greenwich, Connecticut, the fancy people. East Greenwich, Rhode Island at the Greenwich Odeum Theater. And I need you to go see that show if you live
near East Greenwich, Rhode Island, which I heard has really good restaurants. That's what I heard. And then also this week, another horrible thing is going to happen. You know what's going to happen? Daylight savings time will end. I'm fucking sick. Aren't you sick of daylight saving time? Why do they even do it?
I have no idea.
That was Elisa. She usually knows everything. Yeah, I don't like the daylight, because, you know, it's the getting dark at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It's not good for me because I get up late. So 4 o'clock in the afternoon for me is like 12 for a normal person. Noon, you know? Whatever, I never leave my apartment anyway. What else is going on? Please vote. Vote. If you're not registered, go fuck yourself. But we have to vote. I can't believe the shit that's going on in this country. Also, I'd like to talk about the anti-Semitism. Cut it out, you fucking assholes. Okay? It's beyond ridiculous. And just so everyone knows, I'm an American Jew. My family came over to the United States in the late 1800s. Elisa, yours?
1920s.
Oh, 1920s. So we came out. They came out of the closet in the 1880s. So I know that everyone wants, you know, hates Israel. Israel's a democracy. There's a lot to learn about Israel if you're anti-Israel, you know, whatever. Do your due diligence. But all I have to say is all these people who are like, Israel, you know, I know this is shocking, but I don't vote in Israel. I have nothing to do with Israeli politics. Is that crazy? That is like someone saying that Roman Catholics in the United States are responsible and should be vilified for Italian politics. You know what I'm saying? So cut the shit. Anti-Semitism is anti-Semitism. And we are the chosen. And I love being Jewish. Okay. So anyway, that is my diatribe for today, for this week. Please enjoy my wonderful conversation with Matt Bronger, who is hilarious and has a new comedy special out, but you'll hear all about that. So sit back, relax, and enjoy part one of my interview with Matt Bronger. Welcome to Kill Me Now. Today, you know, we have a comedian, which is my favorite. We don't always have comedians. We used to only have comedians, but now I've expanded my horizons here. But Matt Bronger has a new special out called Doug. Not called Matt, but called Doug.
Yes.
He was on in the last season of Mad TV. He is a working, successful, lots of followers. He is hilarious. Ladies and gentlemen, and they, thems, let's welcome Matt Bronger here. Matt.
Thank you, Judy. That's so sweet of you to say. I'm such a massive fan of yours. So that's
oh,
nice
my God. I love Matt Bronger more than anything in the world. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, Matt. You were born on August 1st, which is the day my father died. So enjoy that. Okay.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I'll August 1st. That. Yeah. It was 16 years later. But first of all, I want to say Mazel Tov. This is the Jew bell, by the way.
I love it.
You're a dad.
I'm a dad. Yes. I'm a dad.
You're a dad and a husband.
I'm a dad and a husband. Yeah. Still going strong. 5 years of marriage, 2 years of child life. So,
and
yeah.
You call yourself, you're about the same age my father was when I was born. He was 47. And although he died when I was young, not to be negative.
Hey, it's okay.
I loved having older parents. I mean, I didn't love it when I was a kid, but now as an adult, I am so grateful. Mm-hmm. That I had older parents, because when you see adults of older parents who are, you know, children of older parents, there's a huge difference. There's a huge difference. Like, they're not growing up with their kids. You know, the parents weren't.
Yes. Yeah. And I feel like we've incorporated her into our social life really well, where like we had friends over for a barbecue and like everybody, all my friends have. I have this like girl dad crew where all our daughters have like detective names. There's Rose Bronger, there's Stella Miles, there's Peach Greenberg. Like, if that's not a Jewish that gangster is beyond, or detective,
yeah.
I don't know. Yes. Yeah, and there's Sonny Garcia. So like,
oh my God, I
names,
love this.
Yeah, and we all, it's like, you know, oh, can you get mine? She just ran off. Yeah, I got her. And none of us, you know, it's like there is that moment of raw panic that comes anytime your kid gets out of your sight, but it's not, it's that you have this life where so many things have gone horribly wrong already. Where I think if you're in your mid-20s or early 30s, you haven't yet. You haven't taken all the knocks. And my wife and I have taken so many. Like, our
it's
history
just
is
right.
So
because it's like, yeah, your wife, Kara, right?
Yes, correct.
Uh-huh. And your daughter, Rose.
Yeah.
Which Rose is such a good name.
Thank you. Golden Girls, basically. No one in our name, no one in our family has that name.
I love
Kara
it.
I just woke up and was like, I like the name. I'm like, you know,
it's
I can't
argue. It's a Jewy
it.
Name, you know.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Wait, let me get my bell. Okay. Yeah, it's I have to say, being a parent and a comic, but my kids are, you know, 21 and 26.
Wow.
What the fuck is that? It's usually coming from here, not there.
I know. We're staying in this apartment building while we get some renovations done to our house. And it's got this giant open air area because you can have that in Southern California. But it's also right next to a fire station and right by a giant hospital where they helicopter people in.
Okay, well, that's good because we'll see how many. I'm right by a hospital, too. We're going to compare how many sirens are on your end versus my end. So you just have one. You just had one, so I'm going
to. It's been pretty tame today, I'll say. So not to jinx it, but.
Oh, my goodness.
We'll have dueling sirens.
Okay, Matt.
Yes.
Let's go back to the very beginning. You were born in Chicago.
Yes.
You're an only child of school teachers.
That's right. Yeah.
And you were born in Chicago, but your parents moved to Portland, Oregon.
Yes. They were, you know, low level school teachers. So they moved to Santa Barbara, and they basically lost their jobs in Illinois because of there's a whole thing in the late 70s, especially early 80s, where, you know, it was this idea of like, why don't we just slash public health and education so we have to pay less taxes? And everybody was like,
yeah,
sweet.
I think that's still going on. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's all the rage. And so they landed in a place called Portland, Oregon, where that wasn't it. Once those measures reached there and people kind of went for them, they were already entrenched enough that it wouldn't affect them as much, even though people kind of fought it tooth and nail. It's still a pretty lefty place. So it didn't, they basically just ended up there because they got jobs. Like, my mom got a job at Lewis and Clark College and my dad got a job in the public school system. So,
and what did they teach?
My mother taught English. My dad taught history, but then went into administration. So he was a vice principal, then a principal.
Did they meet in school or as teachers?
They did. Yeah, Deerfield High in Illinois.
God.
They started
Your
dating.
High school sweethearts?
High school teacher sweethearts, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Oh, they were teachers already. So they didn't
meet
like
already,
in college.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Oh,
No.
I can't with the people who, you know, married their high school sweetheart and you're like, how long is this going to last? Seriously.
Everyone I know who did that is divorced.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I can't speak for other people, but, you know. Yeah,
I can. So you're an only child growing up in Portland, which, okay, before we continue, this is all I want from you.
Yes.
I want to work in Portland. I want to work there. I love Portland. You
I
have
got you.
To help. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah,
I did something.
What'd you do? You did something bad.
I did a private gig at the, what's the stadium where the basketball players play?
The Moda now. I know it as the Rose Garden when I was a kid. You know,
Rose Garden, and your daughter's name is Rose. I never promised you a Rose Garden. But I did a big event there. I performed like on the court. And I love Portland. I've been there a few times. My connection to Portland is that one of my best friends from when I was a senior in college, I have never told this story, but when I was a senior in college, or between my junior and senior years in college, I lived on campus. I went to Rutgers, and I'm just doing that because there's a lot of Jews there. Anyway, so I got a job at a Mexican restaurant, and I became, you know, those people you're just like, you're like a magnet and you become best friends immediately.
Sure. Yes.
So it was this guy, Dan Ryan, who was at Rutgers. This was the, he had been there because University of Portland, is it? Oh, is it Oregon, University of Oregon? University of Oregon. Notice how I say it correctly, Oregon.
Sure. Yeah, you did. Nailed it.
Yeah, I don't do Oregon. I don't do that.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, good job.
He was an exchange student, right?
Okay.
And we ended up working the summer. He was leaving at the end of the summer, but we became really good friends. And I love Oregon because of him. You know, it's so vastly different than growing up on the East Coast, especially in New Jersey. It's hippie-ish. I know that you know, there was the show Portlandia and all that, but it's really just vastly, the people are so vastly different than where I grew up. And yet I am drawn to that sort of grungy, hippie.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. It's always been this thing of, like, for example, there's a theater in L.A. now called The Elysian that supports all these really.
I work there.
Comedy. It's great. I did it
for the Netflix comedy festival. Awesome. Yeah.
So, you know, I walked into that theater for the first time and was like, oh, Portland. Like, that's my childhood, where it was weird. You know, when I was, you know, younger and shittier, I would call it. It was, you know, it's so much bad art. It was just clogging the streets. But it's kind of like, I now miss it. Now I have a bit in my act that I'm working on about how, like, you know, AI is taking over everything. And isn't it sad that this is all we'll have is us assholes talking about our dicks and our badges. Like, that's what's going to happen. That's all you're going to get. But my parents they embraced it wholeheartedly, where they would take me to really, really weird avant-garde theater. And I hated it at the time. But then I look back on it and go, oh, you know, I kind of love. You know, there's that scene in Big Lebowski where he goes to his landlord's show and it's obviously like performance art. And it just like the joke is, it sucks. But it's like, I watch that scene. I go, good for that landlord.
Yeah exactly. You know,
he's doing this thing. And so there was so much of that. But there's also stuff that, like, now the kids worship. Like, there were my parents' friends. I grew up with their three daughters, Jewish family. And they're like my Jewish sisters, and even to this day. And they live next door to one of the guys who was the Portland Claymation. You know, Claymation was invented in Portland. And a lot of stuff.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And he did that video, And She Was, for the Heads. And then we were just like, whoa, that's cool. But it's like, it's beyond cool now.
Right.
Like, I say that to like a 22-year-old who has discovered the Talking Heads, and they're like, oh my God, it's the fucking best shit I've ever heard.
Right.
And you're like, oh yeah, no, I know the guy who, and they're like, whoa, you know? Yeah. So it's kind of this thing that's, I thought it would have faded away, and it's definitely gotten gentrified out to a great extent where, there's still this place called Saturday Market where they sell all these weird paintings and all this cool craft stuff. But, you know, now a lot of it is the stuff they sell is much more practical. Where when I was a kid, it was just like, wow, you're selling these vases? They look like I made them and I'm selling.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So I think the culture disruption from my parents was huge and immense, but I think they also had that, you know, they grew up in the 60s and they met each other kind of through their ideals and were kind of like, okay, at least these people are trying. Like, they grew up Catholic and they found a Catholic church that was literally burned down in the 30s for allowing Black parishioners.
Right.
St. Andrews, it's still there. And they have, you know, they have a rainbow flag in there and they accept everybody. Where it's one of those things where I'm like, this place is, like, how do you have a Catholic church that hates the Pope? Like, hates him. Like, everyone in the congregation is like, oh, fuck that guy. And I'm talking, you know, John Paul II when I was a kid. So, like, it's one of those things I'm really grateful that I grew up in, and it lingers. So when you say that, when people would come and, you know, I had this comedy festival I co-produced called Bridgetown that was there for 10 years. And it got called this, not by us, but there was summer camp for adults, because you had all these people that came and they found this scene and they found all these new fans, and people in Portland were reluctant to support it first because they're like, I don't want to fall in love with this and it goes away. But the comedy scene, because of the fest is gone. It ended in 2017. because of the fest, it's the scene there is stronger.
Yeah,
than
it's anywhere. It's amazing because there were no, there was no scene there for right. I started in the 80s, so
yeah. So you know, there's one club in, in Old Town, and that was it.
That was it. Hey, everybody. If you know me, you know I love my liquid IV, and I love giving it to people and telling people about it. And it's part of my everyday life. I keep hydrated with liquid IV. I put it in my water bottle. Well, I have this one water bottle that I use only for liquid IV. And I put lots of ice in it and cold water because I like it very cold. And it keeps me hydrated and it's delicious. So thank you, Liquid IV. And I have to tell you, I've now given it to my son's girlfriend because, you know, they go out partying. You know what I'm talking about. And it has helped her immensely with her dehydration, that it's great for those nights where you know you're going to be having a few drinks. It's delicious. It comes in pear, white peach, grape, lemon lime. Also, there's a lemon ginger one that is great that has a little caffeine. I just love Liquid IV. And you need to keep hydrated. It's very important. It affects you on so many levels. So do yourself a favor. Keep hydrated in the best way possible. Some people hydrate to live. Some people live to hydrate. I think I live to hydrate. Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. It has 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And this is true. They have a sugar-free stick. They have Liquid IV sugar-free that Elisa, my lover, loves. I don't use the sugar-free. Whatever. But it's also been great for my traveling because I get very dehydrated on my airplane flights. So please, you've heard me say this multiple times. Go get your Liquid IV. You have to keep hydrated. It's very important. So however you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at liquidiv.com. You're welcome. You're growing up as an only child with these parents who are just really open-minded. Mm-hmm. And I have siblings. Did you ever dream, I know you had your neighbors, but did you ever dream, you know, what would it be like to have a sim? I mean, you probably got so much attention.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you didn't get the, here's what I've read so many articles on, you know, the shit you learn from being a sibling, like how to negotiate, how to change the subject, there's so many things you learn from sibling relationships on how to navigate the world because they are a little competitive, you know?
Oh yeah.
So
oh, yeah.
Do you think you're different because you really didn't have to compete with anyone?
I would definitely agree with that. Different is the exact term I would use. I would say if you put side by side, it's better to be an only child or a sibling. If I have to choose one, I would probably choose sibling because of what you said. But at the same time, my parents had me in, you know, in activities.
Putting a siren down for me.
There's your siren.
Yeah. They put you on activities.
And like in the arts and also a little bit of and sports if I wanted, but also public schools. I cannot stress the importance of public schools enough because I had to make friends. I'm not saying I would wish this on any child, but I'll never forget that the time my mom, you know, jogged me down to the bus stop because that's what they did in the late 70s and early 80s. They were always jogging. And she took me down and waited for the school bus. And I'd never been on a school bus. And I'd never been away from my parents except for at another kid's house. And I was going to first grade. So I was 6. I'd gone to preschool. Kindergarten. I never went to preschool. And then, but I was like, okay, but I had this thing where everyone's basically like my mom and dad. They think I'm great and everyone's going to be nice to me and it's going to be, you know, okay. And I can just be myself. Right. I get on this bus. Some of the kids, swear to God, had mustaches. They sat way near the back. This bus was dropping off kids all over the city.
Yeah.
I get on the bus and I rolled on the window and my mom's waving, running by the bus. And I yell out, "Bye, mommy." And the whole bus screams, "Bye, mommy." And they're just laughing. And I just shrunk. I just felt like a husk where all the hope and the love and the optimism just like in that moment punched out of me.
All the innocence is gone.
Innocence. Yeah. And, you know, it got better from there. And I definitely had bullies. But I had people who told me, "Hey, you got to stand up to that bully." And I had people who were very interesting. And, you know, I mean, Portland was so wild. The thing, sixth grade, I was going to Harriet Tubman Middle School and I was 11 and my best friend was a 13-year-old black girl named Africa. And all I listened to at the time was hip hop and all she listened to was the Sex Pistols. That was Portland then, and I say this with no bullshit in me on this, it never hit me as weird. It never was like, it was just, we would go to punk rock shows. You would go to every kind of thing or you would, you know, and I think this is before the advent of the internet where I would go on TikTok and someone would think that was weird or stupid, you know, because of the algorithm, because of definitions, because of rankings and all that jazz. It was just, everyone was just fumbling. But because we had people that were very open-minded like that, and you mentioned my parents were open-minded. Yeah. But they were deep down, my mother especially, kind of a WASPy Catholic in her own way. Definitely, you know, came from a bit of the Chicago upper crust. My dad did not. I mean, I joke that I'm a Bronger of the Sioux City Brongers, Sioux City, Iowa Brongers. You know, there's a helicopter.
No, I'm not doing helicopter. I'm only doing siren.
No, don't. Please don't.
Yeah.
Well, that's even worse. Like when the children's hospital one comes, I'm like, okay, get that kid in there.
Right.
When it's a cop, like, come on.
Oh man. Yeah, I know.
What are you doing? Are you looking for homeless?
No, they should do it because it's really good for the environment too.
Yeah. God bless them. Yes. Yes. Like Kendall Jenner flying her private jet from LA to LA to avoid 5 minutes of traffic.
Yeah.
My God.
They're great. I love them. That's
impressive. So
I love the Kardashians. I love them. They're crazy. They're amazing. All right. So, okay, where the hell were we? You were in the middle of something.
Oh, just saying how it was a very. I get why people like Portland, and the thing that gets me
is your mother being a Catholic, and also. You know, the fact that they found a church that was like-minded, and my kids went to public school here in New York and they are so much better for it. I mean, the kids that went to the private schools, I'm not dissing private schools, but I am. It's like you're with the same people that are like you know?
Right.
And that's not the way the world is. It's so isolating.
Yeah. And it's like, I'm the last person to say this about any kind of an educational platform, but a lot of times when there is a lot of money getting poured into the school, there is an agenda where, and it probably aligns with mine, you know, it probably is like a very left-leaning thing, but I feel like I want my kid to have different voices all over the place. Whereas if you have, say, a school that has one major donor and they pump in a couple hundred million a year, and that person is like, "I don't want you to teach. I want you to teach more of this and less of this." It's like, I don't want that. I don't want anyone having that power. I would like all of us as parents and as voters and as parts of our community to go, you know, I'd like, you know, I mean, I have no problem. Like definitely teach Howard Zinn. You know, because that is the real
history. I love Howard's.
Yes, but at the same time, come at it from different angles. Let's say, where that's all
because everyone has a different experience with the truth.
Yeah, can I tell you something that's I just thought of? My friend's mother had assisted suicide a couple years ago. She had a very bad affliction and she was like, I don't want to go through that kind of pain. There's nothing they can do for me. And when my parents moved to Portland, I mean, you want to talk about like the friends they met and had were, I mean, pretty much full on communist. And she was, you know, they gave her the drug and she had, you know, a bit of time to just talk with her son and daughter. But she was really high too. And so she was just kind of stream of consciousness. And the one thing she said that my friend Lev told me that just made me laugh out loud because he and I grew up together. You know, Lev, when I met him, I was like, your name is Love? And he's like, Lev, man. And I'm like, oh, you know, but it was like, I wouldn't be surprised.
Right.
In Portland, somebody named their fucking kid Love. But he told me his mom just was like veering off and just talking about, oh, I love your kid so much. And I love him, blah, blah, blah. And she goes, stops and goes, why did we waste so much time with communism? that just killed me. Because I just remember where, you know, my friend's dad was like, you know, I'm thinking about flying to Central America to help the Sandinistas. It's like, do what? You're right. Going to get shot, man.
And killed,
how are you helping? You're literally being the problem of white entitlement right now.
Exactly.
You're not John Wayne, man. You don't even own a gun. What are you, oh my God. You know, just that was the
oh, that's so funny.
Leftism that I had around me as a kid sometimes that even to me was as silly as extreme right wingism almost. So anyway, I just had to share that.
That's crazy. You went to Grand Hill High School. Is it the Grand Hill, the basketball player?
No, it's just Grant. It's just Grant.
Oh, I read Grand Hill. I was like, wait, Grand Hill is younger.
A lot of big basketball players came out of there, but no, it was just Grant. It was a massive high school. My high school was over 2,000 students, and then I went to a small liberal arts college in New York that was like around 1,000.
Oh, I know everything about you, so don't even.
Great.
You went to Grant High School, and you were really into the plays, and
yeah. Oh yeah, I first did a school play at like when I was in third grade, and I remember that typical thing that I'm sure you had, that we've all had, the time you got your first laugh. I remember coming out and I had like a cape and a top hat and I was like the bad guy. And I said something about like by tying someone to a train or something like that, a train track or something like that. And the whole crowd laughed, mostly because I was a kid. And I remember being like, this is it. I've been to plays. I've seen a lot of serious stuff. I've seen stuff that makes me laugh, but I've never had this where everybody likes me right now. That's how you and I probably both got ruined initially.
Well, I knew I wanted to be a performer. And I was a music nerd, but when someone dared me to do it and I got my first, that was it. That was the end. That was the beginning of the end. You then went to, which is so interesting that you would go from Portland to Manhattanville College.
Yeah.
In Purchase. Did you pick other school? Like, it's so far away.
I applied. I really had a weird application process where I wasn't sure what I was doing. So I kind of got myself led along by this advisor who I later found out was kind of trying to veering me towards traditionally Catholic places that were still pretty liberal. And so, I applied. My number one was McAllister. That's in Minneapolis. It's very...
Okay.
Very, very good art school. Manhattanville was, you know, small, but really good. And it was a half an hour train ride from the city. I wanted to just go. The biggest piece of advice I took from any of my parents or advisors or friends' parents was my friend's dad was like, just go as far as you can. And just, you'll get so much more perspective that way. Your parents aren't going anywhere. And he's like, you can always come back here. And I had friends who were going to U of O, and I had friends who were going to PSU, and I had friends who were, you know, staying in the Northwest and things. And I was like, well, why don't I just try this? And it turned out to be great because I had all these really good professors. It was weird because I felt very stranded, you know, in this area, in a small campus surrounded by a giant wall with a castle at the edge of the quad. And there was nowhere to walk to, you know, it's Westchester County. It's just
right.
It's like a massive field with a mansion in the distance.
But it is
the richest
beautiful.
Of the rich.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's so gorgeous.
Elisa, my lover, is from Westchester. My lover, Elisa.
Okay.
Yes. But, but your parents must have freaked out when you left because you're an only child.
They did, but they also, my mom got a position at Berkeley at the time.
Wow.
And my parents had this thing where they would, my dad would fly in to visit her every weekend. And then he was like, fuck this, let's rent the house. And so they got an apartment in Berkeley together and loved it. And so they had like this kind of second life.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
childless
so cool.
Life. Yeah, yeah. It coincided kind of beautifully with the timing.
So you studied theater at Manhattanville. Were you the only straight guy in your theater?
I was definitely the only, that's how small my college was. I was the only guy in my musical theater classes. Just the musical theater class. Like everything else, there were other actors, but it was like, it was this kind of, no one had any interest. And I really liked doing them in high school. They fell out of favor with me because it wasn't really my thing. And I was really getting into more avant-garde stuff. I was a huge fan of comedy, but I'd never even considered it. And then, not to get ahead, but when I left and went to Chicago, I found out about all this avant-garde theater and also about improv. And
did you?
So yeah.
Did you, when you were at Manhattanville, did you come into the city a lot?
Yeah, we would go at least every other weekend. We would typically get off the train at like St. Mark's Place and wander around. Talk about an area that's changed.
Yeah.
Not that all of New York has not, but you know, occasionally Brooklyn. And I had this performance art theory class, I believe, where we would just get taken to all kinds of productions. We got taken to everything from Angels in America, which was on Broadway at the
time. Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, to just a movement theater where it was just a lot of shapes and dance, but not. So
right.
Stuff that like, you know, and everything in between. So, you know, the big shows and then the little shows that were kind of barely holding on. We saw, I'll never forget, we saw Issei Ogata, who is a Japanese comedian. And almost, you know, that term gets passed around, but like the Robin Williams of Japan.
Right.
Kind of thing. And he did one man performance art where he would just do a character.
Right.
And it was, but so much of it was about how crushing, I guess, traditional Japanese society can be for the individual, and how stifling. And you know, there, and we had a thing in our ear where a translator was saying,
"Oh, he was doing it in Japanese."
Yeah,
and he was one character or multiple characters.
He was multiple, like once.
So, like Whoopi Goldberg, like they were monologues. Right,
yes,
yeah.
Hey, thank you. Much more the Whoopi Goldberg of Japan, and he. He did like a old Japanese businessman, obviously richer than anything, but was basically just like frozen all the time.
Yeah.
Very angry. And then he did a guy whose whole job was just to watch an empty parking garage underground. And at one point it just gives him a directive. And he's like, you know, no playing around, just watch for burglars or anything. And he's like, but there's nothing to steal. Don't talk back. And he's just sitting there. And he kind of just starts moving when he realizes no one's around. And he starts dancing. And he puts a leg out and he starts really getting into it. And then a voice in the middle of it just goes, stop dancing. And it's like, it was this funniest laugh break for everyone. But it's just like, yeah, that's exactly how it must be.
Right.
Where it's like, this is your role. Do not ever deviate.
Yes.
You know, where and for that, what we do, that's insane. That would be like if you were doing a story someone has seen and they interrupt you and go, no, that's not what your sister said. And you're like, bitch, I will change the story. Shut the fuck up. You
right.
know, like.
Yeah, the theater / comedy, you know, being working in a club versus working in a theater, it's so vastly different. And also, you know, I don't know if people know that the equity rules, once the script is set, you are not allowed to veer from that script or you get in trouble. They have people come in and
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially if your show's a hit. There was a guy I listened to on a podcast who was a director and was like, it's such an interesting era where people will tweet at me that someone dropped a line or something. And it's just like, that's interesting. I mean, I feel like that era can fuck itself. If like, it's like, okay, if you're a nerd for Cats, great. If you've seen Cats 1,000 times, yeah, great. But you're not involved. Your love is wonderful. But for you to go, ooh, like just snitch somebody out.
Yeah, shut the fuck up. It's like the Yelp review. It's like, but we've all done that. Like, that's what's wrong with this fucking world, is this stupid social media that you, I had a bad experience here, even though I caused it, so I'm going to write something real. It's awful.
Oh, I mean, I've been in plays where I've had diarrhea. I've been in plays where I'm like, I am deathly sick, you know? And you get off stage and you just collapse sweating onto a couch because the show must go on and there's no understudy. And, you know, for someone to be like, why was he so sweaty? Is he hungover? It's just like, all right.
Oh, you know, that's so, that's.
I dodged a bullet. This was before we even had phones that filmed. But, you know, back in my theater days. But
my best friend, Bob Smith, who died of ALS and he was an amazing comedian. And he was doing gigs and his speech started to become compromised. And it sounded like he was slurring. I mean, he did stand up until he could, where people could understand him. And he did a private gig and they complained that he was drunk. And he started talking about that I have ALS, you know, and on stage, and he had the greatest, I have ALS and I fucking hate baseball. I have Lou Gehrig's disease and I hate, but so I mean, it's just, people are just fucking assholes.
Hey everyone, I have a new sponsor and I love them. They're called OneSkin. And what is OneSkin? It is skincare. Skincare that is simple. I guess that's the perfect word. It's simple. It you don't have to put on 18,000 products while you're like dying to get in bed. OneSkin was founded by 4 PhDs dedicated to skin longevity. And this stuff proves you don't need a complicated routine to achieve better skin. Their supplements, they're topical, and they make it easy to help your skin stay younger and healthier without putting all that other shit, I said shit, on your face. And the secret of OneSkin is their OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent, did you like that? Senescent cells, those little cells that contribute to skin aging. And the fewer amount of cells that they're called zombie cells, that means healthier, younger looking skin, fewer wrinkles, fewer lines, reduced age spots, natural barrier. And that is very important, especially now it's spring and summer and you're going to be out in the sun. So, you know, you love your skin, so do something for it. Return it the favor of having skin and treat it nicely. Does that make sense? Well, so I'm very excited about OneSkin. And I haven't gotten my product yet, but I am really, really, really looking forward. So I'm going to be giving you an update on my skin, but you should do it with me. For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off their first OneSkin purchase using the code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, when you check out at oneskin.co. That's oneskin.co. And it's oneskin.co. You really, really need to invest in your skin. It's very important. So OneSkin, you're going to do this today. You're going to go to oneskin.co. It is more than skincare. It's about skin longevity, targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your best at every age. Get started today with 15% off using code JUDYGOLD at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code JUDYGOLD. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin. You're welcome.
Okay, so you graduate college and you move to Chicago. You don't move back to Portland.
Right.
I wonder why. So I know now that you were not pursuing stand-up, because had you pursued stand-up, you would have gone to New York, right?
Yes, yes, I would have. I was somewhat aimless. I didn't go. I knew I didn't. My big thing was I had friends who had went straight to Manhattan, and they were living like, you know, these tiny rat hole apartments because none of us had any money. And I was kind of like, I talked to my friend Erin, who I grew up with, and she and her sister grew up with actor parents. So we always had.
Erin lived in New York?
No, Chicago. She had moved.
What's her name? What's her last name?
It was Gretchen. Gretchen.
Oh, forget it. Not Jewish. Okay.
No. Yeah. O'Connell. So no.
No, absolutely not.
And she basically was talking about all the stuff that the cool stuff that was happening in the hundreds of black box theaters in Chicago. And on the one hand, you know, I was telling myself, yeah, this seems much more my speed, but I was also very afraid of just being in New York with no money by myself.
Yeah.
Because I was afraid of failure. You know, I'm just being very honest with you now. It turned out to be,
it's scary.
You know, it was the best thing for me, because I found improv and I found stand-up and I found much more of a way to make a path to making a living. Like, I remember having a crossroads where the head of the theater department was like, I think you should take this Shakespeare intensive after college. And I remember going, I'm already so deep in debt. And do I have a guaranteed role in King Lear when I'm done?
Yeah.
No, you know? And it just, I was like, nah, no, I'm always going to love Shakespeare, but like, no. I want more options than that one. So that was how I got to Chicago.
So you go to Chicago, you have some weird job. You were you worked in a greeting card store. Is that correct?
Oh no, that was during college. That was my summer job in college. Yeah. That was an incredibly boring job that I based my thesis play that I wrote as a senior in college on. Like, what if it was a door to another dimension or something? Because it was just like it was a level of unfathomable boredom where I was like, there has to be more to this job than this, and there really is,
and there wasn't. Okay,
there wasn't. There wasn't.
And you were? Did you train to become a clown?
No, I just did. We took classes that like under guys who were like in the Commedia dell'arte kind of thing, which I remember that being a very strange moment where he's at the front of the lecture hall and he's doing all the characters and he went to Italy to study it. And, it's one of those things. Oh God, what's his name? Wrote that show studio. I was just talking with John Roy, a Chicago comedian, about this, that Studio 54 and the Sunset Strip show.
Yeah.
That knew nothing about comedy and nothing about SNL really. And then, you know, was just saying how that one comedian was like, we should do Commedia dell'arte. It's like, no comedian is saying that. None of us are saying, let's do it. Like, you know, it's like, if anything, I would pick like, oh, let's do some Catskills routines.
Yeah.
Those are funny.
Yeah.
Those resonate. You know, there's slapstick, there's gags, you know, oh, a guy with a giant penis nose, we're going rah, rah, rah.
Yeah.
Like that's about funny for 3 seconds. So he did all these characters on stage and then he got done and he's like, you know, you can laugh. We're all like, dude,
oh,
if
my
you're saying
God.
That it was the Jeb Bush, please clap.
Oh,
it was
God.
Like, it was
that
like, you know,
is, yeah, you as can.
We were like, God, I really, he's killing. I don't want to be embarrassing and laugh out loud.
Yeah. Like, I was holding it in.
Oh my God.
That's hilarious. I have a student of mine who was a professional clown and went to clown school, and it's so hard.
It's hard.
You can
see
it. You can see it in her performance. Her name's Amy Crossman, by the way. She has a one person show coming up, but she, you can, and I gained such just from having her and getting to know how hard it is to be a clown. I mean, it's amazing how much work it is and physical work. Just respect the clowns, bitches.
Seriously.
Yeah. So you, I have to ask you this question. Did your father really like have a van and take old lady shopping?
Yes. And he, the funny thing was that I found out about that. See, my dad, he's a man of very, not a lot of words. You get him talking, it's cool and stuff. But he
that's so funny because you are a man of many words. Yeah.
Many. And I will share my feelings. I will let you know if I'm hurting or sad or happy. I'm that guy who I don't really smoke weed anymore, but when I used to, I would walk right up to people at parties and go, "Hey, I just know I'm high. So sorry." You know, it's like, great. Thanks, strange, huge.
Wasn't even paying attention to you. So great.
Couldn't care less.
Yeah.
Yeah. My dad never wants to burden you. So my dad did hospice work for a while, and
parents. Like, what the fuck is with ridiculous. Your angel parents?
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Yeah. And my dad would be like, "Oh, I was hanging out with Bernie," and I'm like, "Okay, Dad, who's Bernie?" "Oh, he's this old guy. He's dying."
Okay, I've decided he's Jewish. Yeah, go ahead.
I go, "Excuse me," and my dad's like, "Oh, I didn't tell you I'm doing hospice." Like, no, fucker, leave with that. He's this old guy. He's dying. Like, don't worry about it. Like, would you just tell me that you sat with a man?
Oh my God!
And read him books. And my dad said this. He's like, "You know, it's hard, but it's not bad because they don't really want you to talk. Mostly they just want you to listen. I can do that." So he would just sit and listen to rambling people, you know, in their
final days. He's so patient.
Yeah. Oh my God. And he did foster care work where, you know, just monitoring kids in homes where they just make sure they're not in danger. But yeah, how I found out about him driving the old ladies to go shopping is my mom, I came home for a visit and I was like, "Where's Dad?" And my mom was like, "Oh, he's with these ladies." And I was like, "Excuse me? Kids, what? Dad has a harem? What's going on?" And my mom was like, "Oh no, he takes elderly women shopping at Lloyd Center." And I was like, "Get the fuck out of here." And I did. I got all the information I could get out of him. And so in the bit, it became that he puts women in a van.
Oh yeah, it's in the bit.
You gives it kind of a joke. And my dad.
But your dad got mad. You said that he rents a van. So he got mad.
Well, he was like, "It's not a van. It's a station wagon." I'm like, "Too late, Dad. The special got shot."
It's funny. I'm allowed to say van instead of station wagon.
100,000%. Yeah. This is my art. I can embellish.
So you go to Chicago and you're just, I don't know, putzing around, as we say.
Right. Yes.
And how did you get on stage the first time?
I took improv classes. I tried to break into theater, couldn't break in. And also I didn't sleep out on the stoop of these black boxes begging to be, because a lot of it was like friend groups. A lot of the, you know, you had Steppenwolf, which there's no way I'm getting hired for Equity. Yeah. And then you had these other ones that were very cliquish. And I was kind of like, I saw some of the plays and I was like, this isn't really resonating with me. And then I was waiting tables and a few of the waiters and our servers were like, "Oh, you should take classes at one of the improv places." And I was like, "Well, that makes no sense to take a class to make things up." And they're like, "You'll learn what I mean if you do it." And I was like, "Okay." And so I put a little money aside and I took levels 1 through 5. Level 5, I took with Del Close.
I love Del. Yeah.
And he, you know, I always, my friend had a great point where he's like, "Our parents all remember where we were when Kennedy was shot. We all remember in the Chicago scene, the one or two times we made Del laugh, because he just wouldn't laugh at anything." Yeah. And if you had some move or choice that made him laugh, you had that like a jewel, you just kept close to yourself. And then they added, I was on an improv team. We were doing okay. And they added a sixth level and I was like, "I don't have the money." And, you know, "I'm not going to intern," which means hauling kegs every weekend for you for free. And they're like, "Well, then you're off the team." And I was just like, "Well, then I'm a stand-up," because I'd been doing open mics at that point. And I was kind of like, you know, my lightsaber turned from green to red, or I turned to the dark side of the force, where I was just like, "Fuck this." And especially because in Chicago, it's not that the case anymore as much, but you had improv and you had stand up and never the twain shall meet. It was happy as a McCoy.
Yeah. So true. And it's such I mean, it's a great stand up scene, but it's known for its improv scene.
Yeah.
And they want to have nothing to do with.
No.
Yeah.
No. Do you feel like
the improv scene is a little, you know, they think they're a little better than the...
Well, a little more cultured, and yeah. I wouldn't say they're necessarily wrong, but I will put it this way. Yes. This is always my microcosm. Parties. Would you rather be at a party full of stand-ups or a party full of improvisers?
You know what? I'm going to say that. I would totally
say stand-ups.
Yeah, same.
Because most of us know when to shut the fuck up. Most of us know not everything's an initiation.
And most also, I don't want everyone saying, yes, and, hey, nope. Now.
Yep. Yes.
Yes, and, yeah.
Because they're just, it does teach you cooperation. It teaches you teamwork. But sometimes I just don't want to be on a team. I don't want you to form a team with me and five other people.
It's true. I equate stand-up with jazz, but that's more like jazzy in a way because of the... what's coming next? Okay, I got to react to that. Okay.
Yeah, so, and I did. I was around people who were improvisers who still some of the quickest draws I've ever known. Right,
yeah.
People who thought of stuff so fast. I remember there's this guy, Bill Glass, who is, he's now in all these insurance ads where he's teaching people to not be their parents.
He has mustache. Yes.
Yeah, he's so funny. And we waited tables together. And I remember once, my friend Wes was walking on the stairs with him and somebody was passing him. And the guy was like, hey, you know where the bathroom is? And Bill just goes, yeah, it's right up the stairs to the left next to the pants exchange. And they kept walking. And then Wes started cracking up, realizing the guy who asked where the bathroom was had like the ugliest purple pants on he'd ever seen. Like, and
that's hilarious.
Bill made fun of the guy's pants. The guy probably was unzipped and peeing it and then went, oh, fuck you. Like it probably didn't hit him. Until, you know, just really quick draw. So I'll give them that.
Thank you so much for listening to part one of Kill Me Now with Matt Bronger. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling. This podcast, nor my life, as Elisa will attest to, would not be possible without Brittany Jo Sowards, who married a Jew. If you like the show, which, I mean, how can you not? I'm brilliant. Please subscribe and leave a review. Please. It just helps more people find it. And then I can, you know, continue with it because it's getting to the point, people, that I might not be able to. And that is not a good thing because I love interviewing people. Also, I got many Twitter people writing to me saying they listened to the end. So, Daniel Papa, I love you. He said, I listen to the end every goddamn podcast so long. I fucking love you, Daniel Papa. I love you. I have another one. Our next one for next week. I'm not telling you her full name, but her first name is Jessica. But I'm just not telling you the full name because I want her to have her own thing. So right now we're celebrating Daniel Papa. I wonder if he's related to Tom Papa. And he likes me. He thinks I'm funnier than Tom, which I totally am. Oh, don't tell Tom I said that. Anyway, yeah, so thank you for listening until the end. Follow me on Twitter at Judy Gold, JEWDYGOLD, and you can see everyone being anti-Semitic. Follow me on Instagram at Judy Gold, JEWDYGOLD. Yeah, that's right. And TikTok, which I'm going to be doing more TikToks because everyone yelled at me that I didn't do enough TikToks. And, you know, go to my website, judygold.com. Oh, I'm doing a live podcast in New York City on November 11th for the New York Comedy Festival with Al Franken. So if you live in New York, get your asses to the live podcast. It's going to be fucking fantastic. What else do I have to say? I don't know. Enjoy your Halloween. Dress up as something, you know, fun. And don't dress up as Jeffrey Dahmer. You know, that's ridiculous that they do that film and then people are... No, he was a fucking serial killer, you assholes. Anyway, I need to eat dinner now. I love you all for this. Thank you. Thank you all. Please write to me if you listen to the end because I love you even more than I love my kids and Elisa. Okay? Okay, I was just kidding. All right, we're going to go eat. What are we going to eat, Dar?
Whatever you want.
Dar, you know you have a craving.
No, I don't.
Oh, I thought you wanted to go to the Mediterranean place.
Whatever you want.
See how my girlfriend is? You booby girl. All right, anyway. I got a new I got a new office chair and my back doesn't hurt. I'm so fucking, it was really expensive, but I'm really happy I did it. All right, I love you all. Thank you for listening. And as we always say, and as Daniel said to me, Daniel Papa, so long.